Hello and welcome to the Come Fly With Me podcast, where I discuss dream holiday destinations and career plans with my guests. I'm your host and pilot, Kenneth Fairweather, and today I'll be talking with clinical kinesiologist, researcher, and strength and conditioning coach, Daehan Kim. Daehan was born in Seoul, South Korea, and studied kinesiology as an undergraduate at Arizona State University before completing his master's at the University of Saskatchewan. Daehan is the founder of Embodied Dynamics, a business which helps his patients with tasks such as restoring physical foundation and reconnecting neuromotor functions. Join me as we delve into Daehan's early life, love for sports, his journey as a kinesiologist, and discover how he wants to spend his time in his dream destination, South Korea. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Enjoy the ride.
Welcome to Check-In, Daehan. Where are we going today?
We are going to South Korea, where I am originally from. I'm going back to my home country to give back by providing workshops and seminars. This is not, you know, particularly about what I want to see, but I am also visiting there with my daughter, who was born in Canada. So she's Canadian. But I want to show her how unique and beautiful her motherland is.
And you're originally from Seoul in South Korea. So mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what it was like growing up there?
It was great. As you already know, South Korea is small and overly populated, especially in Seoul. And like many other Koreans, I was often pressured to study hard. People in Korea are generally warm-hearted and caring with each other so much, up to the point that people from other culture could find Koreans a bit nosy. But based on my experience, it is a society where you become naturally resourceful while adapting to the culture of caring for each other.
What are your fondest memories of growing up in South Korea?
Well, it's a, you know, Korean students spend a lot of time in their school. So it's a hanging out with, you know, their schoolmates and, you know, playing basketballs on the street. And yeah, like, yeah, it's really the most part of the life is formed within the school. So it's really a lot of memories that I have is about hanging out with, you know, friends. Yeah.
Nice. And basketball and football or soccer, they're a couple of the biggest sports in South Korea. Is that right?
Soccer, yeah, football. Football is you know, the biggest one. And actually, baseball was a really big one before basketball became big as well. Yeah, and you know, of course, golf is becoming huge as well. Yeah, but originally, you know, football, soccer, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now that we know a bit about Daehan's early life, let's get to know when he found his calling for kinesiology. This is a final boarding call for Daehan Kim. Daehan, your journey to South Korea awaits.
When did you know you wanted to be a kinesiologist?
As far as I understand, the profession called kinesiologist exists only in Canada and Australia. And I think Canadian kinesiologists and Australian kinesiologists play somewhat different roles. So I feel that I may need to explain briefly about what I do as a Canadian kinesiologist first, before I explain when I wanted to become a kinesiologist. Canadian kinesiologists are considered human movement specialists, adapted in various environments, including but not limited to medical settings, occupational environment, sports specific settings, and general fitness and wellness setup. As a clinical kinesiologist, I help people regain their function after injuries and accidents or while dealing with chronic pain. The typical form of intervention includes retraining their movements and posture and improving their brain's way of controlling their movement in various situations. These are considered empowering form of therapy because they help people develop their abilities to independently progress from injuries and actively manage their pain. And ironically, I wanted to have this career even before I learned that the title for this profession actually existed. So it was in 2009, right after I graduated from the bachelor's program in kinesiology at Arizona State University in the United States, that I wanted to become a medically applicable exercise specialist. At first, I only had a vague idea of what I wanted to do, but had no concrete plan to make it happen. Well, I didn't even know where to start from. Fortunately, my colleague Keely Golden understood the dilemma I was in and helped me by connecting me with Guido Van Rijsegen, who had already mentored many of the giants in the industry of kinesiology. He was a medical professional who worked with several major league baseball teams in the United States. At the time, he created a certification program called Kinetic Integration Specialist at Oregon State University. Kinetic Integration Specialists are specially educated personal trainers who work specifically with injured population and following Guido's guidance. The concept of the profession sounded well aligned with what I wanted to do. So I packed up everything and moved from Arizona to Oregon to work with and learn from Guido. And Guido focused on teaching me how to understand the pros and cons of current medical intervention and develop strategies to effectively fill the gap using movement retraining method. And this helped me more clearly define what I wanted to do. So the way that I practice as a Canadian kinesiologist is built based on what I learned from him.
So what was the reason that you decided to study at Arizona State University? And is it because they have a good reputation with respect to kinesiology?
Well, fortunately, kinesiology program at Arizona State University has a good reputation. When I was attending the program, kinesiology merged with life sciences department, which strengthened the research in neuromuscular physiology and cell biology. And Tempe, Arizona, where my campus was located, was also where the headquarters for Exos was located. Exos was called Atlas Performance back then, and was considered a birthplace for lots of modernized gold standard methods for training professional athletes. So that naturally enhanced the quality of education. But I had no idea about such reputation before I started to attend the program. I chose Arizona State University because their tuition for international students was the cheapest among all of the research-focused universities in the United States. So I feel very lucky that I still benefited from high quality education, even though my initial reasoning for choosing this university was not so strategic.
And did you go to Arizona State University straight after you finished school in Korea, in South Korea?
No, actually not. So the first university that I attended in the United States was in Kentucky. It's called Campbellsville University. It's a small university that had not many Korean international students. My parents specifically chose that school because I needed to learn English first. Yeah, so they thought that if I am surrounded by lots of Koreans, I would just speak Korean. So my first, few years of living in United States, I learned a lot of Kentuckian accent.
And I imagine it must have been, your English must have improved quite quickly in that environment.
At that time, I didn't really know, but then later on, I moved to Arizona and I interacted with many Korean people who lived in the part of the United States where lots of Koreans gather. That's when I realized that, oh, that actually worked really well for me to study in Kentucky, because I was much more comfortable in speaking in English at that time. Yeah.
How did you find the difference in culture between South Korea, or between Seoul and Kentucky, and Kentucky and Arizona?
So I'm gonna compare Seoul and Arizona first, because the Arizona is a much more individualistic society, just based on my experience. And compared to that type of culture, Korean culture is a bit like a nosy culture. Like we want to know what others are doing, and we want to be able to help people when they need help. So that's the good side of being able to care for each other, being in the culture of caring for each other. But at the same time, the cons of being in culture is like it's almost like living a lifestyle of keeping up with Joneses. It's sort of naturally come like that. But compared to that, Arizona people are a little cooler. Like they don't really have to keeping up with Joneses. But at the same time, they are much more individualistic. And also, this is also, it's very interesting, because both Arizona and Kentucky, they are considered redneck states. But they have a very different type of rednecks. So Arizona and Kentucky, they are different in a sense that Kentucky people are also quite caring. They can be a little bit nosy compared to Arizona people. So in that sense, Korean and Kentucky culture have something similar.
But it sounds like in some ways that Kentucky was maybe an easier transition from South Korea than Arizona might have been. Would that
To me, it was. People in Kentucky were very nice to me. Like they were interested in me. And probably also because I was in Christian University. It's called Campbellsville University, and small university, and people are like students and teacher all together. They are very, how can I say that? They're very people oriented. They are interested in knowing my culture, and they were trying to understand what I need as an international student, and they were trying to include me in their sort of intramural sports and things like that. And as soon as I got there, they sort of gave me an option to work in different parts of the campus, so that I can be not only to earn some pocket money, but also to get familiarized with the environment. Yeah, so it was very good. It was very good. Yeah.
And then from Arizona State University, you went on to the University of Saskatchewan to do a master's.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What was the main reason that you chose the University of Saskatchewan?
There were two major reasons. The first reason was related to my field of interest. I wanted to learn more about how neural control of movement is related to biomechanics of movement, specifically for balance control and joint alignment. And this was heavily influenced by my work with Guido Van Rijsselaer in Oregon State University. And I was looking for the faculty members in the United States and Canada whose research focus aligned with what I wanted to learn. And my master's program supervisor at University of Saskatchewan was one of them. The second reason was that I was attracted to the opportunity to live in a very unique environment while being sufficiently funded. Saskatchewan is known for its long winter and cold weather with average about negative 15 to negative 20 degrees Celsius, which is like the opposite environment to where you want to settle in. But I had never lived in that kind of environment before. So I was excited about the challenge. But at the same time, it looked like a beautiful and livable place. When I Googled it to see some photos, it was like a winter wonderland. And I also saw some photos of people casually playing ice hockey on the street. That looked pretty cool to me.
That was interesting. I thought about the temperature because Seoul can be quite cold in the winter, can it not as well, doesn't it?
It can be cold, but it's not like up to like negative 15 to negative 20 degrees.
Right.
But at the same time, Korean winter is a humid winter. So it can be felt very cold. The Saskatchewan winter is a dry winter. So it wasn't as bad as I expected, but still it's very cold. Like there are many people who actually got pneumonia because they were moving from one campus to another. That's like a 5-minute distance, but then they were not properly dressed. You know?
Yeah. I couldn't imagine. I've never really been in temperatures. I think minus 5 might be the lowest I've been in.
yeah, compared to Australia. Australian Christmas always like really hard.
But I get, well, because I mean, I've talked to some people like I know I have a friend in Finland and she's like, has like some really cold temperatures in the winter there, but
mm-hmm.
but like it seems to be like if it's that cold, do you sometimes mm-hmm. just have to stay inside?
Oh yeah, a lot of time. So that's why there's like a underground tunnel and things like that, like within the campus in between the building.
While you were studying, what sort of work uh-huh. experience did you do?
So my first work experience while studying was a dishwasher at a cafeteria and an equipment manager at a student recreation center during my freshman year. That's in Kentucky. And after that, I worked as a personal trainer and a lifeguard in Arizona State University as soon as I transferred there. Then I worked as an intern strength training coach at two different sports training centers and as an intern for two different physiotherapy clinics. I also worked as an intern laboratory tech for a microbiology lab. And the last three internships were mandatory internships for the kinesiology program in Arizona State University. And I'm glad that they were mandatory.
Would you not have, were they maybe not something that you wanted to do if they weren't mandatory, or did they offer something that you sort of weren't expecting maybe?
It's relatively easy to get the position because the school is collaborating with the industry. if I need to get that kind of position on my own, it would have been quite hard. And also keeping that and studying at the same time, coordinating the time and location will be very hard as well. Like back then, there was no lot of like online, courses, right? So we have to be in the location to be able to study. So definitely, the established internship program as a part of education. A curriculum that was very helpful.
As we take off, it's time to find out about Dehan's first steps as a kinesiologist.
What was your first kinesiology job after leaving university?
So right after I graduated from the bachelor's program of kinesiology, I worked as an interim strength conditioning coach for a university sports team while I was working as a research assistant at the same university. And after graduating from master's program, I had the first job that had the official title as a kinesiologist in 2013. And for that position, I provided occupational rehabilitation program for people with work-related injuries.
When do you feel that you began to establish yourself in your chosen field?
Well, I still have a long way to go. Not only because myself need to learn more, but also the profession as a kinesiologist is, especially the clinical kinesiologist is a very young profession. So, yeah. But I began to feel that my practice was getting more recognized as an important part of the interdisciplinary clinical care when the medical doctors started to reach out to me to collaborate since about 6 years ago.
Get comfortable in your seats and grab a drink and a snack as we hear about the best golf course Dehan has played, as well as more about his work as a kinesiologist and his insights on virtual reality as a tool to reduce pain.
You're the founder of Embodied Dynamics. When did you first have the idea to start this company?
So Embodied Dynamics is the name of my private practice. I began practicing independently as a kinesiologist since the year of 2016. And about a year later, I named my practice as Embodied Dynamics to emphasize that this is an approach to help people's nervous system to embody the great potential that is already within themselves.
You are also a kettlebell instructor. Can you talk a little bit about how you run these classes and the benefits people can get from doing kettlebell exercises?
Yeah, absolutely. There are so many benefits of doing kettlebell exercises, including, but not limited to, improving both the muscular and cardiovascular strength, as well as whole body coordination. I mostly use it as an effective tool for functional recovery. Well, the shape of the kettlebell provides rare opportunities for people to handle uneven weight and naturally redevelop joint stability throughout the various range of motion. The kettlebell exercises also teach people how to explosively generate whole body tension at the right timing. When this approach is combined with other techniques for controlling their breath, people can learn how to be truly strong from their innermost core.
Are kettlebell exercises some of the exercises that you feel people get the most improvement out of? Are there any specific exercises that, or is it hard to say? Is it more specific to an individual?
Yes, it's a really case by case. Yeah, so there are people who recover better through loading. There are people who can actually reorganize their healthy movement pattern much better when the external loading challenges them. And if that is the case, the kettlebell exercise is very effective for them. But there are people who actually need a very internal cue, like meaning that someone needs to tell them in terms of the joint position and alignment and things like that. And it's not just about the individual differences, also about their recovery stages as well. So I'll have to adapt based on my understanding of their recovery stage and also their learning style and what works, what kind of method works the best for them to be able to achieve the healthy movement pattern. Yeah.
And is that something that you assess with each individual? Like, we have like a, I guess, like a preliminary assessment for somebody to say.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Assessment is a very, very important part of kinesiology work. Like, my session typically starts with assessing certain movement in the beginning. And then we do certain things. And then we always end with assessing the same thing at the end of the session to see how much of an improvement they could make during the session.
You have practiced Taekwondo. Is it capoeira?
Yeah, capoeira. Yeah. It's a Brazilian martial art.
Yeah. So you've practiced Taekwondo, capoeira, kickboxing, and Wing Chun. What is it about martial arts that you enjoy so much?
So training martial arts is a great way to develop physical literacy and coordination. I certainly like that aspect, but I also love the sense of achievement that I get from training martial arts. Regardless of what martial arts we do, I believe that the martial arts all provide opportunities to strengthen the joints throughout the whole range of motion. And martial art training is also a great way to learn about other cultures, especially capoeira. You'll need to not only learn how to count in Portuguese, but also need to learn how to sing in Portuguese and play Brazilian musical instruments. That was very challenging for me, but enjoyable.
Where did you first learn capoeira?
In Canada, in Vancouver. You know, I was a teaching assistant and a research assistant in a university, and they had like a some of the commercial martial arts studio can send the instructors to, you know, provide the after school program with a small amount of fee. So I joined that, and I really loved it. I loved it. I love the acrobatic part of their movement. Yeah. And even before I joined it, I've been always kind of curious about it, because I played a video game called Tekken.
Yes, yes.
There's Eddie Guerrero. His movement is it's based on capoeira. So,
oh wow,
that was all really right. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I used to love the Tekken games.
Oh yeah, yeah. You remember Eddie, right?
I vaguely can't actually put, but I do remember a character called Eddie. But yeah, I can't think of what he looks like.
He's the guy who always like in handstand position, and then attack people with like a spinning kick type of thing. But
oh, right.
You know, he's always kind of upside down, like. Capoeira is a very upside down.
Okay, so movement. All his moves were capoeira, is that?
Yeah, all his moves is capoeira. Like, you know, right. Eddie's movement is a capoeira, and it's really interesting that, you know, both taekwondo and capoeira, they use kick as their main method. But in taekwondo, you're almost always upright, like your head is up and foot is down when we're kicking. But in capoeira, your hand is always on the ground. Not always, like you very usually on the ground, and your stand-up grip is very low, but then your kicking is very high. It's a very upside down movement, and you need to be able to still look at your opponent's movement while being upside down. So it's very, very interesting, and it creates a rare opportunity to live in sort of different gravitational relationship. Yeah.
Is it, when you're doing capoeira and your opponent would also be upside down, right? Like they're not, you don't have like any cross martial arts or anything like that.
Well, so when people make the some attacking movement, that's when they become upside down. But then when they're in kind of ready position, they are usually in upright position. So it's very interesting. It looks like a dance a lot because the way that we do the dueling in capoeira is that people are sort of stepping all the time in specific movement called zinga, and it's like rhythmic stepping. And this dueling is very, very unique in a sense that our goal is to not hit the person, but kicking very close to that person. So being able to control the timing and also coordination is all important, but also really understand the intention of another person is very important. So yeah, it's a very fascinating martial art. Yeah.
So there's a lot of self-control.
And I find that it's very interesting because in the Eastern culture, the self-control in martial arts is like a very Zen type of movement. You need to find the calm within yourself and things like that. In this capoeira, the self-control is sort of combined with a very rhythmic and loud and, you know, very sort of musical, festive environment. Very interesting.
Sounds really cool. And in terms of the musical instruments, what sort of musical instruments are used?
So the very typical one and very, very important, essential one is called a birimbau. It's very hard to explain because there's no other instrument that is similar to that. So I'll try to explain as best as I can. So you can think of it as like a bowl. It looks kind of a very much like a bow string, like bow that is attached to the string. So the bow is kind of a bent and string is kind of has a tension, right? And on top of it, there's a certain kind of a how do I explain this? It's like ganglion looking thing that's attached on top that actually resonates the sound when we hit the string of the bowl. And that's the kind of mandatory thing to be able to do the traditional form of a capoeira dueling, which is called batizado. Oh, not batizado. I forgot the name. I just kind of slipped out of my head. But you know, usually when they do the dueling, there are like people kind of standing in circle, and in the center there's a person playing birimbau and singing, and then you know people who's standing in the circle, they kind of take turns to do the dueling in the middle of the circle, or they can actually choose a certain person and kind of invite to do the dueling together. it's a very, their kick and their movement is very deadly, but then at the same time, their goal is not to hit each other, but kind of coordinate the movement. But if they want to, they can actually kick. So like you said, it's a self-control.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, it sounds very cool. Mm-hmm. And you're also very into your golf day, huh? What is the best golf course that you've played?
I would say it is Formosa in Auckland, New Zealand. It is a very challenging course as the hazards and bunkers are very strategically located, meaning that they attract the ball. but the stunning view sort of compensated for my frustration. And I was definitely humbled by the challenges and learned the importance of preparing a game plan ahead of time.
Yes.
Oh, I just remembered what that dueling is called in Capoeira. It's called Hoda.
Hoda.
Yeah.
Where is the best place you've hiked?
There are so many cool hiking places in British Columbia, where I'm living now. The best one for me was hiking to Elfin Lake. It's a relatively long hike, about 5 to 6 hours, depending on how fast you walk. But it is not very challenging and has great view all throughout the hike. And at the end, even more stunning view is waiting for you. You can either camp near the cliff, but at a safe distance from it, or you can crash in a shelter that is open to any hikers. People donated their board games at the shelter, and that's how I got to play Cards Against Humanity for the first time, and I got hooked.
It's a good game, isn't it?
Oh, man, yeah.
What are your views on using virtual reality as a tool to help reduce pain?
I think it is becoming more and more recognized as a valid clinical tool to reduce chronic pain. As far as I understand, its application currently focuses on helping people with persistent pain that is specifically due to maladaptation of the brain's way of processing sensory information. To make an analogy to a computer, the virtual reality aims to improve the software issues rather than the hardware problem. There is already so much evidence that many of these people have experienced significantly reduced pain while playing virtual reality games. Currently, we are seeing more and more collaboration between academic research sector and industry sector to develop the ways to translate the pain relieving effect of being in the virtual reality into a long-term effect outside the virtual reality. And of course, improving user friendliness is also an important mission. In my opinion, it is also important to understand the patient's medical history and pain presentation thoroughly before using the virtual reality as a patient care, to make sure that the patients need an intervention that improves software issues, not the hardware problem. Hastily applying virtual reality to the patient with chronic pain, who actually needs an intervention to resolve hardware problems, can lead them to be more frustrated. Many people with chronic pain usually have tried various forms of therapy without getting much success, unfortunately. And rushing another form of therapy only to see no result can be very emotionally difficult for them. It can also lead to an unnecessary confusion. There is a podcast called The Daily, and there was a recent episode by Dr. Helen Ouyang. The entire episode was about using virtual reality for easing chronic pain. And I really liked that episode, especially because this doctor was really trying to provide a balanced view between pros and cons of adapting virtual reality as a medical intervention for treating chronic pain and possibly replacing opioid treatment.
Is virtual reality something that you would ever use with your clients, or does it not, do you not really get to that stage where you have to intervene?
There are actually many people who can be benefited by virtual reality among people who work with the kinesiologist. Because, you know, kinesiologists don't necessarily fix the hardware problem. That's more medical realm. But kinesiologists can help them with kind of reorganizing the brain's way of organizing their movement. But to be able to affect the brain's way of organizing the movement, we inevitably need to consider how the brain processes sensory information. So the movement and sensory processing, they are not two different things. They almost always combine together to generate the movement as they intend. So the intention for the movement is a very important part of it. And the sensory information is a really important part of kind of forming the intention.
You've helped people with chronic diseases like cerebral palsy. What are the most challenging and rewarding aspects of this part of your job?
When helping people with neurological conditions like cerebral palsy, it is difficult to know how much of their functional deficiencies truly comes from the disease itself. That is the most challenging part for me. And it is usually difficult for them to retain the movement that they learned and trained for. When regression happens, it is difficult to know if it is purely because of their neurological disorders or some problems with my training method or lack of adherence to their home exercises. But when they actually show any improvement, it is very rewarding. For example, when the patient who used to lose balance every time she steps forward with her right foot started to demonstrate that she can now do this movement without losing balance, I was very happy. Both she and I know that even though that specific movement is a very simple movement for lots of people, it is a crucial step for her to be able to improve the quality of her life. All of the people who have cerebral palsy who's working with me, they have seen medical professionals and they've gone through medical treatment or they are still getting their medical treatment. Their kinesiology alone is not the sole solution for this. This is specifically for helping them improve the quality of movement. So the kinesiology approach is specifically for improve the quality of their movement. Yeah, there are lots of compensatory patterns happening, not only biomechanically, not only alignment wise, but also the timing of the muscle firing and the coordination, the order of muscle firing that can actually add more dysfunction than what the disease is already sort of shaping.
Who are your is cerebral palsy patients? Do they take up quite a lot of your time in terms of the patients that you have, or do you have quite a range of different?
I have quite a range. I have quite a range. Yeah. So I think because, you know, part of my education is a sensory motor neuroscience, there's some referral coming in to me, you know, to help people with neurological condition. But typically, people with a neurological condition, they're even if it is a movement intervention, they usually work with people who are in the hospital and helping them, like a, you know, physiotherapist who's more specialized in neurological disorders and things like that. So me seeing people with a neurological disorder is not necessarily typical sort of job for other kinesiologists.
We have arrived in South Korea. Let's hear what Daehan wants to do while he's here, as well as his plans for the future.
Welcome to South Korea. What do you plan to do while you're here?
So I will first hang out with my family. After that, I will do a workshop on neuromuscular control. Then I will go for a father-daughter trip to Jeju Island and explore other beautiful places in Korean countryside. And of course, we will eat many exotic Korean foods together.
And finally, what are your plans for the future?
So I still have a long way to go to further establish my career as a clinical kinesiologist. So I will continue to learn more and work hard to help people. But I want to make what I am currently doing as a reproducible system. So I started to write a manual. Finishing that manual is my short-term plan. And my long-term plan is to write a book together with my mentor, who has been my guiding post for shaping my career. He's Guido Van Rijs again. And based on that book, we'd like to do workshops together and help others in this field. I've already started to write some content, but understandably, it is going to be a work in progress for quite some time.
Thank you very much, Daehan, for being on the podcast. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
That was Daehan Kim, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you had a good time. I have been your host and pilot, Kenneth Fairweather, and it was a pleasure having you on board. Safe travels, everyone. Frozen in time, stuck in my mind.